people just like you have taken the brave step to do this thing we call work differently. They tell their self-unlimited story to inspire and encourage you. Another story begins now. Today, I'm anticipating a playful conversation with my guest, Logan Timmons. Welcome, Logan.
Hey, Helen. Thanks for having me.
One of Logan's workscape activities is game design, hence the reason why I threw that playful in there. But I also know you to be a lover of puzzles and the wonder of the natural world, which is why I'm going to owe you a bunch of photographs from my recent trip to New Zealand. So I'm still pulling that together for you.
Great, great. I'm looking forward to it.
It was an interesting thing, actually, to travel around my home country, which I already know, and look and think, oh, what would be interesting to Logan? Oh, that might be interesting to Logan. So thank you for providing me a bit of a context to reconsider my environment that I just possibly took for granted.
That's cool.
My kickoff question for you, and let's just go straight into it. Why is game design something you do in part of your life? And you're very welcome to, you know, take us back to the beginning or whatever.
Right. Great question. I don't think anyone's ever actually phrased it like that to me before. Why is game design something I do? Well, I guess the logistical nuts and bolts part of it is that I discovered Dungeons and Dragons in 2016, 2015, somewhere around there.
As an adult or a child?
As an adult. So I'd never experienced, this is like tabletop role-playing games I'd never experienced until I was an adult. I'd done, you know, Monopoly and Scrabble. My grandma was a big Scrabble person.
Yes.
And those sorts of games as a child. But I had no idea about role-playing games until I was an adult. And I was immediately swept away, absolutely enchanted. I had considered myself a fiction writer in my teens.
Yes.
And in primary school too, actually. But it felt like there was something missing in that creativity. Like I enjoyed that form of creativity, but there was another itch that I couldn't name that wasn't getting scratched by that. And it turned out that role-playing game design was the itch. And I only found that as an adult. And I think it's something about creating an experience or an invitation to an experience that's really juicy or impactful or empowering or exciting for me, and inviting other people into that experience with me. And I design games that I want to play. So I'm imagining myself playing them with friends and loved ones as I'm writing. And so it's an invitation for people to play with me and to co-create this experience. So, you know, I often have an emotion or a journey that I want to go on, but the exact details of that experience or journey are never in stone, and they're always impacted by the people who play with me. And so that it's that co-creation and collaboration and space for that was the itch.
Yeah.
That needed scratching.
And my sense too of the difference between writing a book and creating a game is that the game brings different pieces together, but each version of the game that gets played is a different experience for the person over and over again. Whereas writing a book or giving a book to people is like, it's quite linear. You know, you start at the beginning and you finish, and it's a very similar kind of experience.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, a book is it an unchangeable artifact? Sure, you can scribble on it and write in the margins and write fan fiction. But a game is kind of like a puzzle that's deconstructed, and that you can, you know, you can clip little bits on or add them on and put the puzzle pieces together however you want and make a totally different shape each time. And the people that you play with will be drawn to different puzzle pieces that maybe you didn't use the first time around, or they'll whip out a puzzle piece from, you know, the past times playing related games and throw that into the mix and totally change it again. So it's like a free-form puzzle that it's literally never the same. There's this one game that I've played over 10 times called Village Song by the Story Brewers, the lovely, incredible folks. I've played it over 10 times, and each time has been really different.
Wow.
And I even played the same game with the same people and maybe, you know, played a different character, and still been such a different experience. It's pretty amazing, actually.
Yes. And that Dungeons and Dragons moment, was that just something that you were doing from a work point of view, or just a, I'm always kind of struggle to make this distinction between things we do at work and things we do outside work. I don't want to kind of say life because I understand work's all part of life, but I'm kind of wondering what was the context in which you discovered Dungeons and Dragons?
Well, yeah, I'll perhaps age myself a little bit here, but I was scrolling on Tumblr and saw Dungeons and Dragons. It's purely a, like a personal, like leisure thing
Yes.
when I explored it, and yeah, then just it became a hobby for me, and then I started putting things out on itch.io, which is a hotspot for indie role playing games,
Yes.
and then it be then I got, you know, hired for various gigs or to write certain things, and that became small pieces of work, and then joined, yeah, created Amble Studio, which is all about game design, and it just kind of like snowballed.
I love that because I think sometimes people think that the things that they do in work have to come from very work-like contexts. And what I'm hearing in your story, there's something that came from your leisure context that was enabled you to play and explore that interest. But it's not like, oh, I'm thinking I want to be a game designer. Let me go find a course at the local university and sign up for it.
Yeah, totally. I never expected to be working in game design, actually. So that was the furthest thing from my mind when I was looking at that. I was thinking purely creatively and thinking
Yes.
about this itch that I mentioned. That was at the forefront of the mind. And I was just scratching that itch, and then yes, yeah, continued to scratch it in, but not in like a dangerous way. In a good, satisfying way.
I love that idea of scratching the itch. Is that something that you think is part of your personality or something that your family environment encouraged you to be curious and explore? Because I think people do have, particularly in childhood, these moments of curiosity, and I'm fascinated by how we often temper that down, as if to a point that when ch children grow up to be adults, they've kind of lost that curiosity or that sense of, oh, I should do something about that itch. It's almost like I'm not entitled to or I'm not allowed to.
Yeah, I'm reflecting. I know as a child, I was very good at this school system that we have. And part of that comes from curiosity and wanting to learn, and part of it comes from wanting to obey authority and be obedient.
Yes, as the school system encourages us to be.
Exactly. But I do think my parents often would ask questions about what interested me and got me to reading quite young. I loved reading from a very young age. I mentioned my grandma who taught me Scrabble. She would
Yes.
read to us, and I had an extensive library that we could borrow books. And sometimes I would just stare at all of her books, just kind of be like, "Whoa, I don't even know what's in all of these. Wow, what, I don't know so much." And so I think that reading definitely helped with that curiosity and being able to learn largely on my own terms, and then, you know, start reading the books that mum and dad bought, and then borrowing from the school library whatever I was excited about.
I know for me that reading played a big part because I grew up in small rural towns in New Zealand, and reading opened up this world beyond the people that was possible for me to meet or interact with. And also, it was a time, we're talking the 70s and the 80s, a pre-web environment too.
Yeah, totally. Got me thinking in all sorts of different ways. And it's I think it opened the door for, or opened the door more for imagination, and that being a real font of creativity, that's really exciting to me. And a big part of role-playing games, you're using your imagination all the time. But I think that reading sort of grew that skill in me as well.
One of the things that I have found in the work that you do with Amble Studio is that you are one of the people behind the newsletter. And I'm even thinking you're potentially maybe the main writer. Is that, would that be true? Yeah.
Yes, that's
And
true.
I find that the connection that comes through that and has come through other times has actually been an invitation to play, to reflect, to appreciate the natural world around us, to be present, to engage meaningfully without judgment, to live with heart, care, and wonder. And I just have in front of me an example of the words that you had in the newsletter that came out at the end of the year. And I'm just going to read it because it reflects so beautifully the way you orientate to the world. And it says, "Dear Explorer, if I could, I would do a cloud dance, the type that makes clouds moves whenever you gesture, and deliver this letter via a cloud pantomime. But I went outside to begin my frolicking and there was not a cloud in sight. Someone else must have beat me to it. So email it is then."
It's a good one.
You draw me in, and which is why at different times, and you also put a puzzle in some of the newsletters, and you know I've been a person to respond to that, but I see this quality in you that you draw people in by engaging, and it gets attention. And I'm kind of wondering, I know you do it intentionally, but kind of where might it come from?
Thanks, Helen. I will say that particular the cloud dance frolicking one was Curie, one of my colleagues, inspired that one. I think there was a previous one related to clouds and perhaps raining and rain writing. And then she was like, well, I thought this was what it was going to be. And I was like, oh, I'll save that one for next time. So thank you, Curie, for that one. But I think, I mean, and you'll probably notice that a lot of those intros to the newsletters are related to nature. Or, a bird delivering the newsletter via song, or a fish handing you a bottle with a message in it, or some such. And that's connected to recently, over the last 5 years, I want to say, I have been exploring nature connection, knowing intellectually about nature, but also connecting emotionally and learning to love this planet, which is the only planet we've got, which birthed me and everything that I can see and that I rely on. And particularly moving away from the sense of individualism, like, oh, I have to be an adult and do all the things myself. And if I can't solve all my problems, then I'm a weak failure. Da, 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 when literally I can't breathe without trees. Like, the idea of me being able to do everything myself is pure fallacy and not helpful. And can, for me personally, can get me in a downward spiral of like, oh, I can't fix this problem. I suck. Blah, 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 blah. So, and I think nature connection has really started to bring me out of that, helped me think more in communities and cycles and connections and
I
how
love
people
that.
can build each other up and connect to each other. Like, it's very easy to point, there's a bird out, what it is, but it's very easy for me to be like, to anyone, oh, what's that bird? And people instantly look it up and be like, oh, I think it's this, or I don't know. But it's very easy to connect with someone through nature. And it can be visually, through seeing something, feeling moss, smelling something, smelling the rain, tasting things with precautions. And so I think using nature, and it's something that I just really love, and that brings me alive and makes me excited. So having that as a framing to invite people in, I think really works. And everyone has some nature around them. Even if you're living in an apartment block, you can look outside and see the sky or a cloud, or maybe have a plant indoors that's keeping you company. So it feels like it's a great equalizer. Even if we're in totally different biomes, spheres, different terrains, there's still, we're all on this planet together. So I think it's a great connector.
I'm very much feeling that theme coming through of connecting with people. I've been reading this book recently called How to Know a Person, The Art of Being Deeply Seen and Deeply Seeing Others, something like that. And in it is an invitation for us to reveal more of ourselves, but also to listen and ask questions of other people that might allow them to reveal more of themselves, and that it can be a privilege for people to do such. And one of the things that happened with me recently on my visit to New Zealand is there were different people that I would meet that I didn't necessarily know, and they asked that question, "What do you do?" I hate that question. So I'm curious, and being playful with you, if there was a question that somebody could ask you in meeting you, what would you hope or like as a question that they might ask to start a conversation to get to know Logan better?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on what do you do is such a boring question and often not very exciting. So I've been thinking similarly, like what's a question that I can ask people and that I would like to be asked. What I've been playing with recently is something like what brings you alive recently? Or, what's exciting you recently?
And there's a time component. Okay, so here we go, Logan. I'm flipping it back to
All right.
you.
Happening.
What's been exciting you recently, Logan?
Yeah, I think recently, and why I add recently is like it can start from there and then build the conversation out. What's exciting me recently is I'm doing a nature-based leadership course over this year. It's a 10-month course, and there's eight sort of major topics that happen. And one that we're doing at the moment is tending the wild. So the wild outside us and the wild inside us as well. And there's been an invitation to consider what makes you feel wild. It's something that makes me feel wild and sort of alive and excited is like crawling on my hands and usually on my toes, not my knees.
Okay.
Crawling like that, or like a bear crawl, if you that's a particular workout form that you can do. So yeah, crawling has been exciting to me lately. Also been going down to my local wetlands and connecting there. And recently I found a dragonfly wing, just
Yes.
one dragonfly wing. It's like this big, maybe the size of your pointer finger, if you have an average sort of pointer finger length.
Yes.
And like it's totally transparent, but there's such tiny little details in it. So that's exciting. And I think also what's been sort of exciting lately is just growing older. There are things that I didn't know would happen when you get older, because media is like, oh, everyone's 20 and has abs and
Yes.
is all like waxed and shiny and all this kind of stuff. So learning about how my body gets older,
I have
and
no
I don't know
idea
how many details you want to
what
know.
age range I would put you in. Are you?
Yes, no, that's I'm curious. People is with the beard ages me, so you might
Mm.
need to de-age me in your head, actually.
I would have
Change me.
said maybe mid-30s, or it could even go up to early 40s, mid-40s.
Ooh. Right. What do you
It,
want to
but as you
know?
say, it could be the beard that's kind of pushing it at that
The
sort of other
beard.
end. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes,
So
I'm 26.
26. Okay.
26.
So, and part of that for me is a perception of how people orientate to the world. And this has also been sort of top of mind because one of the reasons for the visit to New Zealand was to go to the wedding of a, I want to say boy, but I need to say young man. He was a boy when he was page boy at my wedding when he was 3 years of age. That was 31 years ago. So now he's a man of 34 years of age who was getting married. And of course, in those moments, everybody's got conversations about how they know this person and what the connection to them is. And I mentally had to keep thinking, he's not a boy, he's a grown man. But around his family and different people, some of it I think is if you have seen the passage of time with somebody, then you maybe have a sense of many of those years have passed. But for people I've never met before, I think there's something about a quality of, it's not necessarily that you've been through the passage of time, it's how you've negotiated the different experiences that you've had, that it creates a kind of wisdom or a depth or a substance to people that feels that there's something more grounded and lived in about them.
Totally. Yeah, I hear that. That reminds me of a book that I'm reading at the moment, a chunky book I'm making my way through. It's called Nature and the Human Soul by Bill Plotkin. And it's broadly a theory about ecocentric societies and how one might live and, nurture children and the next generation
Yes.
in being more ecocentric. And it goes through a whole bunch of layers, but one of the layers that you kind of reminded me then is this idea of a social center of gravity. And as a baby, your social center of gravity is the family, mainly your parents, because you're getting all of your care and needs from them. And then as a teenager, the social center of gravity goes to your peers, trying to figure out, who you are and who you want to be in this stage. And the book posits that Western society often gets stuck in this teenage phase, lots of different reasons, and so the center of gravity can kind of get stuck there. But I'm still reading the teenage section. It's quite long, but it posits, I think, at the end that the social center of gravity moves, and it can kind of move eventually to nature and to sort of the bigger picture. So I was reminded of that and this idea of how people situate themselves in this model. They're further along the life cycle, so
Yes.
it kind of resonates with that idea of feeling like more years have passed in some ways.
And I wonder too, the fact that you love to read, I'd probably note many people who I know read a lot probably have that sense of being older, and I've got air quotes here, whatever we think older is, as if somehow they didn't need to live all the experiences themselves, but they've kind of been vicariously moving through the stories of others and gleaning the wisdom or the, I don't know, maybe something out of those stories, whether they're aware of it or not.
Yeah, I think that can definitely be true. But learning lessons from the social follies of fictional characters can help you out in the real life social follies. Yeah.
One of the things that you've done that I find particularly fascinating is with your game design, you made a game about yourself. Would you
I did do that.
share some more about that? How it came
Sure.
about, what it's about?
Yeah, so it's probably my proudest piece of work at the moment. And it is called Logan, an autobiographical tabletop game. And it is a game that's also my autobiography. So it's to use the classic example of Dungeons and Dragons, where you make a character that's an elf or a dwarf and you
Yes.
get magic and you go on big adventures and slay dragons, etc. and get gold. In Logan, you play me. You play a version of me that you get to make. You can give him a nickname. You play through real events that have happened in my life. So you get to pick different events, roll some dice to add a bit of chance to see how well those events go or
Yes.
how poorly. And you come out the other end with a version of my life that you've created up till age 23. I think it was 23, 24 when I released that. It was an exercise in vulnerability. Like everything, the interesting thing about that game is that everything that happened to me is in that game. And so there's a lot of truth in it. But with a number of the events, you know, there's three ways that any event can go. It can go really well, it can go kind of okay, it can go badly. And for most of those events, I've only been through once. So only one of those three options is actually what happened to me.
Yes.
But all three of them are plausible and could have happened to me.
Almost
So
was a
there's
bit like
like,
sliding doors type effect.
exactly. That's what got me thinking about how to make this game in the first place. I was thinking about sliding doors moments in my life. For example, like learning about Dungeons and Dragons in the first place, which eventually got me into game design, which got me into Amble Studio, which is how I would have even met you through Haley. So
Yes.
if I hadn't, you know, happened to be on the internet that day, we might not even be having this conversation. So there's like this massive sliding doors moment, and it made me think. And because I'd already been a game designer for a couple of years leading up to that, this idea of chance was related to like dice rolling, as happens in a lot of
Yes.
these games. So I was kind of thinking, yeah, what would happen if these sliding doors moments had been different? And game design, tabletop role-playing game design, is sort of my primary art form. It's how I kind of answer these questions or explore these questions or
Yes.
feelings or emotions that I'm having. And so yeah, I wrote this game about my life and these sliding doors moments. And then I play tested it. So I got people that I knew to play it and sort of narrate out loud what they were doing, and I would take notes and then give feedback. Played it on a podcast as well. So not only have I written it, but people have played it, which has it's been really interesting to sit there while someone else is playing my life, seeing where it stays similar and where it differentiates, and where what often happens is, you know, the player self are two real people, and the Logan that comes out in the game is kind of a mix of both of us. Way when I've been there while that person has played, it felt really connective. Like I've learned a lot about them, and they've learned a lot about me, and we've kind of had this experience together.
I read one of the reviews of somebody who'd played it, and they said it was a deeply emotional experience.
Yeah, there's like some pretty raw stuff in there, like me coming out, me realizing that I'm trans is in there. You can choose to come out, event choices. My parents' divorce is also possibly in there. So there's some big stuff in there. And especially for people who've lived through similar experiences, it can
Yes.
evoke a lot of that same stuff. Sometimes allow people to process them or tell a different story about it. So yeah, it can be super emotional.
I find it fascinating on two levels. One, that you would choose to be that vulnerable by putting these elements of your story out there, and kind of tied to that, because some people, but there are some people who write a biography or a memoir to tell their story, but that you would put it out there in a form of a game such that there's not a fixed kind of path. It's like there are these things that happen to me, but I'm giving you some agency to kind of see how they might have gone, and that it really does draw somebody in to see what decision they might have made. It has, as you've indicated from game design, a way of drawing people into it rather than just there are pages on the book and I just kept turning and reading the story. So why do it, Logan? Why?
I think, yeah, that part about it being interactive really changes the experience.
Yes.
And for, yeah, it gives you choice. It gives the reader or the player choice in what happens to them and what happens to me. And so you can choose whether you want to come out or if you want to work out or get a tattoo or all of these things. And I think having that choice of what level of deepness or of emotional vulnerability you want to go to can be really, empowering, and people really thrive off agency, and being able to choose. Whereas if you're reading, and I think there's something about interaction that kind of shows me, like me, the designer, as like a real person, like, oh yeah, these are just random events. Like anything could happen. Like that's life. And I feel like at the end of playing the game, you can really get a sense of like, this is a person who, life has happened. And at the end of the game, I kind of encourage the player to disentangle from their version of Logan. And I'm like, whatever happened in this game, the real life Logan is okay. He's doing great. He's happy. He's, happy with his life and where he is. And that, I feel like that lands more strongly than if it was in a biography. Because you're just kind of being fed information, and it's like, okay, that's the end, and it's all good. And well, could even be better worded than that. But this idea of having been emotionally entangled and then hearing it's all good, kind of, I don't know, in general, like relief, and because you're actually feeling that, it lands, like the information lands better if it's connected to
Well,
emotion.
it's emotionally tangled and using agency. And I'm curious when that term agency might be strange to listeners. What would be your definition of the term of agency?
Well, that's a great question, Helen. Agency to me is the ability to, like, I mean, at a basic level, it's the ability to choose, but it's also, I think, based on having all the information that is available to you, making informed choices. And even just, I think, even just, yeah, the ability to make informed choices, even when the choice you have to make is not the one you want to make, if you're still informed about it, that still feels like agency.
For me, I liken it to here is a moment that has come up. Maybe it's not a moment I'm happy with. Well, I could choose to resist. I could choose to lean into it. I could choose to learn from it. These are all choices that I can make. And that when sometimes people are like, oh, that person's resisting, that's a terrible thing. It's like, well, they may have made an unconscious choice to resist something, but it is a way for a person to express having some control or influence over the situation. We might look and go, no, they shouldn't have resisted. That was the wrong thing to do. They should have accepted that situation. But helping individuals, I think, to recognize it's a choice to resist, it's a choice to accept, it's a choice to lean in, it's a choice to go with it, it's a choice to learn. And that's a key thing for me in the self-unlimited idea is that I think many individuals don't realize they actually have agency and choice in defining their work relationship. They tend to think, oh, thank goodness an organization employed me. And then they kind of give over agency to choices about, well, what will I learn? What are my values? All of that is like, no, the organization will decide for me what I should learn and what my values are and what work I should do in a day. And then you see sometimes organizations saying, well, we want our people to be engaged and to innovate and lead. And I think, yes, but you just told them they couldn't do all these other things. So where's the point that they recognize they actually have choices and can make choices to influence things? And so, yeah, it was a key driver for me around helping people understand that you have choices to make and there might not be choices you like. So you may be thinking, oh, I hate this job. I want out of here. Well, it's a choice to leave. But you might think, but I can't leave. I've got a mortgage to pay. Okay, well, then it's a choice to stay. You might not like what that involves, but you do have the ability to leave or stay. And these choices that you make can have consequences.
But like owning it as a choice rather than as this external thing that's happening. That's agency. That's exercising your agency and can just really reframe the whole experience.
And absolutely. I think that owning bit does reframe the experience rather than this is being done to me. I have no power in the situation. It's like I could reframe it as this is happening. Now, how do I want to respond to that? And if I stay, then let me make the best of what I stay. I sometimes use this quote and I jokingly laugh from the great Canadian poet, Justin Bieber, that the grass is always greener. where you water it. So, many people think the grass is always greener somewhere else over there and they need to leave to get there. And then they get there and find it's not necessarily greener, but that sort of reorientating to, well, I can water the grass here and maybe it will get greener. And if it doesn't, then I can exercise another choice and go and do something else.
Didn't realize he was Canadian.
Well,
I'm gonna be
he.
thinking about that.
Well, not the fact that I'm called him the great kid poet.
No, well, I mean, you prefaced it.
Yes.
You prefaced it with laughter, so that wasn't the surprising thing. There you go.
When you think about the game, was there sort of an intention of sort of educating other people about things like agency or choice, or was it more from the point of view of here is a fun thing I could do, I'm happy to use myself as the main narrative for what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I don't. There wasn't consciously that idea around educating on agency and choice, but I think it was that reframing for myself, and going over my past and choosing to write down my experience of what happened, the choices that I made and the choices that I didn't make, and being okay with them. And my life hasn't been all roses and rainbows. And I stand by the choices I made. I can understand why I made them at the time, why they served me. And in reflecting, I can understand like the mindset or what I was aiming for with those choices. And I can choose if I want to carry that mindset forward or not.
I
And so
think.
because it did that for me, I guess I'm not surprised that it is able to do that for others if it's kind of embedded in there.
I think there's such wisdom in that. And as you said, understanding the choices you made, why you made them, how they served something. Something
And
very,
sometimes
very
it's something as
powerful.
simple as safety, and especially if there are big events, or if you're, young, or, a child, as I was at this time that I'm talking about, safety is like key. And sometimes, but I have had to make choices that I didn't like for safety reasons. And if I didn't do that, who knows if I'd still be here. So thank you, past me, for making, maybe a bad, air quotes, decision. And that's a good outcome for me.
Yes. I remember one time when I was doing some psychotherapy many years ago, commenting on about, almost a judgment on myself that something was a crutch. And the psychotherapist reframed it for me. Well, if you've got a broken leg, a crutch is a very helpful thing. For a
Yeah.
period of time, a crutch is a very helpful thing. The point is not to keep having the crutch for the entirety of your life. So, you have the crutch for the point that it serves the healing process. And then you hope that the healing process is full, that you put the crutch down and you can reuse the limb or the point that you're actually having the crutch for. And I just found that such a useful reframing and such a compassionate way to look on myself and think others might judge me for the choices I've made or the things I've done. But at the end of the day, it comes down to, was it serving something for me? And as you say, safety was maybe what's needed and giving yourself a pat on the back for what that provided at that moment.
Totally. And I think that it wraps around or reminds me of this idea of that I've had of this, individualism. Like I have to do everything by myself. I'm not allowed any crutches, not allowed any help. Shouldn't need to ask for anything ever. Like, well, no, you're a human. Like your leg's gonna break, you're gonna get tired, et cetera, et cetera. And there are tools made exactly for that. So use them.
I think there's something that weaves through there too, that all of these moments of decisions that we can make, sometimes I think people think, but the right decision was this. Just even releasing that notion from who knows what the right decision was. That's some kind of external view. It's that, can I make a decision that I feel is right for me? And I may look in the future and go, maybe I would have made another decision. But what I've learned for myself is if I'm doing that in the present, looking back, I have more knowledge and experience now, so I shouldn't, re-arbitrate what that decision was based on what I know today, because at that point, I probably was making the best decision with the information that I had at the time, and good on me.
Yeah, exactly.
As we come to a close, when you think about the life of Logan as the moment that you are here and now, are there moments that you might have thought, well, Logan, if I could go back and give you advice at a younger age about things that you could necessarily do differently, because I don't want that feeling like that we're judging your past life in any way. Things that you might advise yourself, or you might advise somebody else who might be on a similar journey.
Things that I would advise my past self. I quite like the life that I have now, and I think the advice that I give my younger self are things that I've learned that have taken a long time. Things like trust yourself, trust your intuition. You don't have to, don't always rely on authority figures. Love what you love unabashedly. And beige is not a bad color.
Beige.
Beige. I know beige gets a bad rap. I used to knock it, but actually, I have a beige sweater that I really like. So embrace the beige is my third advice.
Love that. I think that reflects that we all have different aspects of ourselves that others might think are odd or strange. But I think part of the beauty of each of us as individuals is to lean into those parts rather than sand them down or shine them up so that we're somehow acceptable to the norm. That how can we be a more true, authentic self?
Totally, totally agree. And you might not be surrounded by folks who appreciate that difference, but there's 8 billion people on the planet, and I don't know how many millions in Australia, but there are people who will think you're super cool exactly the way you are,
Yes.
and you just being you changes the world because there's no
Yes.
one like you in the world.
The thought that I would add to that is that whatever decisions you have made in your life and experiences you've had, you can shape the narrative by which they are told, which things come into the foreground, which things go into the background, how you would position them and phrase them. And I'm reminded of a time when I was going for a job interview. And just to give a bit of context, it was with Ansett Australia, which was a major airline that was in Australia 20 years ago before it went bust. And the person interviewing me was a woman who'd been a major in the Air Force, a completely no-nonsense woman. She'd also been the head of the mission, Australian mission to Antarctic. So knew how to survive. Yeah, exactly. Knew how to survive in really harsh conditions, lead people, et cetera, et cetera. And there was just a small interview panel, herself and the person that I would be reporting to. And in the interview, did that classic thing. So tell us about a time you made a bad decision in your life and what you did about it. And when the question came to me, I don't quite know how I had the presence of mind, but I kind of thought for a moment and then I said, can I come back to that? And I think she thought, oh, okay, you just don't want to answer this. You know, that's your equivalent of a pass. So they went on to the next question. And when we got to the end of the interview, I said, can I come back to that question? And she looked really surprised. And I said, so here's the thing. I don't know that I've made a bad decision. And I said, what I mean by that is at the time I made a decision, I was making what I would have thought was the best decision with the information that was available to me at that time. And it's only in hindsight that I could say it was a bad decision. And, you know, but that's kind of based on, like I've just said before, the information I have now. So yes, I can look back and think there was a moment where I could have made another decision, and here's a moment, let me tell you about a moment, and here's a decision I could have made, and maybe this could have been the outcome. And then the interview wrapped up, and I thought, well, that's it. I don't know that this woman, military major, head of the previous Antarctic mission, is going to take that as a good kind of sign. Within 15 minutes of me walking out the door, she'd already got on hot contact with the recruiting agency who rang me and said, you've got the job. And what it turned out was that part of the job, though it wasn't explicit, was about being able to speak truth to power and part of to have questions taken from airline pilots and heads of different agencies wanting information from this unit. And so you had to be able to have critical thinking and challenge. And so it turned out that I had ably demonstrated to this woman what this thing was going on. And so there's two things in that. One is I would encourage people to not necessarily accept the premise of something that comes their way in terms of a question like that. But also, you just never know if you're being authentic to yourself and how you relate to something, how that may have been exactly what the moment needed. And that links, I think, to your trust, your intuition. I
Certainly.
don't necessarily have a clear moment. Yes, I was trusting my intuition in that moment, but in hindsight, I look back and think I was acting quite intuitively to sort of override the situation.
Nice. That's a great story.
Oh, thank you. Logan, this has been lovely to chat with you. Thank you for letting some of yourself be seen and exploring with me and letting some of myself be seen. I feel like we are getting to know each other even more.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. This has been a really lovely chat.
That's a wrap on today's conversation. If it sparked joy or ignited a thought, please leave a review and rate us on your favorite podcast platform. It's like leaving breadcrumbs for fellow explorers. And because sharing is caring, if you've got a minute, please spread the word to family and friends. Every star, every review, and every share propels us further into the podcast universe. Thanks for tuning in and being part of these conversations. For more goodness to inspire and support you, visit our website at beselfunlimited.com. Keep the curiosity alive, and remember, your feedback lights up our world.